Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. Dan Rosen here. Sean Rourke out there. I am home. Sean, you are home, I assume.
Of course I'm home. We all need to be home. That's what's going to make this all better and allow us to see hockey at some point. I have almost every inch of my study memorized at this point. So that's what I've been doing during the break.
I like how you call it a study, like it's in, like you're in the Clue or something like that. Anyway, we are recording this on Wednesday, and we got a really good one for you here. We're talking to Doc Emrick shortly. Have some great stories from with Doc. It's like story time with Doc. We'll also have James Van Riemsdyk on, and we'll talk a little bit about the NHLPA player polls a little bit later. Those were very interesting. But first, Sean, we got to get to it. The league is still on pause. There's no timetable for resumption at this point. But Bill Daly spoke to Nick Kotsenika, our columnist with NHL.com, and did mention that playing into August is a possibility if we can get this thing going again, if we're allowed to get the season going again. And they have not ruled out the rest of the regular season just yet either. I mean, I know there's a lot of talk right now about how, well, maybe you could jump right into the playoffs when it's over. And, you know, a lot of talk on the player conference, video conferences that the NHL arranged the past few days. We'll get into that soon, too. But they haven't ruled out playing the rest of the regular season yet. So everything is on the table, which I think is good and creates a little sense of optimism.
Well, everything has to be on the table. I mean, this is uncharted territory. We don't know where we're going, and we don't know when we're going to get there. I thought the one thing that Bill said that really caught me by surprise was that the window was more open as far as going deeper into the summer than they had originally planned. Now, maybe the Olympics had something to do with that and the fact that they've been moved back a year, and that opens up some TV windows, you know, as far as broadcasting, if you can play again, but also just the fact that they're willing to go well into August into some of these buildings and, you know, figure out how to get this done. So, you know, I think right now in the throes of everything that's going on in society and where we are with the COVID-19, you know, sometimes it's hard to be optimistic. And then other times you look at statements like that and you're like, oh, I could see that working. So, yeah. You know, I think we have to ride this out, you know, see where we're at. But look, sports, we all know, and you know, this is a common theme, sports aren't the biggest thing in the world and they never will be, but sometimes they're a heck of a distraction. And I know, you know, as we try and get through these times and spend a lot of time with my family and catching up with people, sports is still a huge part of what they all do and what they're doing, whether it's old games or, you know, what if exercises or just talking about memories of the games that they've been at and the times that we've all shared. So, you know, I think when normalcy comes again, the NHL is going to be a part of it for a lot of people.
Yeah, I fall into that category. We need sports. I need sports. They are, for me, more than a hobby, you know, the livelihood. But for many, it's an escape. It's entertainment. It's an opportunity to lose yourself in something and really come engrossed in something. For many, it's gambling. You know, sports betting is huge, obviously. So we obviously look forward to the day they hopefully will come back sooner rather than later. I also found an interesting one. We just did, you know, Thursday, Friday, Monday, and Tuesday, the NHL had the video conference calls with players. They had one player per team, a lot of captains, and broken down by division. So you had the Metropolitan, you had the Pacific, you had the Atlantic, and then the Central in that order. And I also found it interesting to hear some of the player perspectives on if the season is able to resume, what can you do or what do you want to do? Play commissioner for a day. And, you know, obviously, you know, some with bias, we're talking about how you go right to the playoffs. But there was trepidation in that as well. I think Mark Giordano and Connor McDavid on Friday brought this up in particular, and Nick Foligno did as well, that jumping straight to the playoffs could be a dicey situation because of the intensity. You go from doing nothing to the intensity of the playoffs could be quite interesting. And the players aren't, you know, I mean, look, they will do as told. They will do what is necessary, but there is a little bit of concern of jumping straight to the playoffs. So there's a lot of discussion on that, I guess, going on. And it was kind of reassuring to me that the discussion is among the players as well.
To me, the most shocking thing was that PK Subban was ready for an all 31 team tournament.
Yeah.
he's really, you know, with the Devils being out of it, you know, he's really pushing for everybody to be included in some sort of a play-in. And look, it's got to be difficult for teams like that, right? PK's working out every day. He doesn't know if he's going to play hockey again this year or if he's going to play again for 6 months. So,
yeah,
you know, it's as difficult for the players as it is for everybody. And I, you know, I think if they had to go straight into the playoffs, I think it would be okay because everybody would be at the same level. That first round would almost be, you know, you don't want to say a warm up, but it, they would get up to speed as they went along, and nobody would be at an advantage because they'd all be starting from the same place. So, and the other thing that I found most reassuring and nodding my head vigorously to as I watched those videos was, my God, when we do get to the playoffs, if they come, they're going to be unbelievable because everybody's going to be healthy and everybody is going to be motivated. You know, there'll be no, I can't believe I'm playing my 100th game. You know, how am I going to do this? It's going to be, I can't believe I'm playing hockey again. Let me go run through these boards. So when we do get to playoff hockey, it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, Mark Giordano brought that up as well, and McDavid echoed those statements, and it was echoed by a few others, and they're right. I mean, Giordano said it could be the best playoffs we ever have because everybody is going to be, unless you had major surgery that was going to keep you out until September or October, you're going to be in. Like, think of all the players that could be back. Dougie Hamilton, Vladimir Tarasenko, Nathan MacKinnon was out for a bit, so he'd be healthy and ready to go. So even the guy we're going to have on, James Van Riemsdyk, broke his index finger, was supposed to be out 4 to 6 weeks. He should be, you know, if we start up at some point, he'll be ready to go too. A couple of things on those calls too. Brady Tkachuk and Gabriel Landeskog updated the two players on each of their teams, the Senators for Tkachuk, Avalanche for Landeskog, about who contracted coronavirus. Said all of them are doing well, so that's good to hear. Alex Pietrangelo said Jay Bouwmeester, he's handling everything well and he's doing well. But there was also, and I know you agree with me, Sean, there was some great interaction among the players on these calls too. Ryan Getzlaf taking us through his yard to show us the chicken coop that he is building right now. I thought that was the highlight of it. And then also Zdeno Chara's comment about Tuukka Rask, if you haven't seen it already, saying that he wouldn't want to be quarantined with Tuukka Rask because Tuukka Rask's farts smell really bad, apparently.
Yeah, well, you learn something new every day on those calls. And the chicken coop was great, but it wasn't even the best part about the Ryan Getzlaf one.
No, it's which, true. It's
which
true.
Was that his kids drove the golf cart into the tree while he was conducting the call, and he was nonplussed about it. And I think it was Marc-Andre Fleury who was like, oh, nice parenting. But again, you know, we talk about normalcy, and we get to see these players, you know, in their quasi-natural state in the locker rooms, and you get to hear a lot of good chirps and, you know, see how much they enjoy each other's company. But to me, it was just the comfort level that these rivals had with each other, you know, just talking and reminiscing and just being themselves and kind of, you know, taking the stick out of each other. You know, I thought when Wheeler was talking to Jamie Benn and was like, that guy, because everybody got asked what they missed about playing against other people. And he's like, that guy wants to fight me every time we play. He's asked me to fight 20 times, and I've told him no. And Jamie Benn just laughing away, saying, well, you know, that's what I do, and that's the way I play. And, you know, it was kind of an insight into the dynamic of professionals who at times truly dislike each other and dislike the teams that they play against, and then professionals as human beings and that bond that they all share.
It humanizes everything. And I thought that was really evident when John Dellapina from the National Hockey League, who was moderating the calls, doing a terrific job moderating these calls, every one of them, he dropped out of the Central Division call with Roman Josi, Jonathan Toews, and Alex Pietrangelo. And those guys just kept talking. They just carried on a conversation as if the world wasn't watching. The hockey world wasn't watching. It was just three guys, hockey players, rivals at times, just carrying on a conversation about what's going on and what they think about everything right now. I thought that right there was a great insight into how these guys are. We, like you said, we see them on the ice. We see the rivals and everything like that and how they go at each other. But in the end, they're all in the same boat. They're all in our boat right now. We're all together in this.
Yeah, and I thought it was great, except for the anti-goalie love, when they were all talking about watching old games and, you know, just like we are, you know, sitting there and kind of digesting some of the history, whether it's on the Pause Binge site on NHL.com or, you know, going on YouTube, or almost every regional is broadcasting some old games. Like, I know that Buffalo did the four overtime game last week against the Devils, which was the first year I covered that beat, and you know, it's one of the favorite games I've ever covered, and a lot of people coming back and talking about it and what happened you know, during that game, and how incredible it was, and these players were doing the same thing, watching some of these games that they weren't involved in, and yeah, they were talking about watching the really old games and how bad the goaltenders were.
Yeah.
But they weren't bad, it was just different. Now the goaltenders are really good, but even back then they were good. They just played a lot different. So I'm standing up for the goalie union.
Yeah, you're standing up for the goalie union. Anyway, let's get to our first guest, because talk about broadcasts and broadcasts. I bet you some of those games that the guys were watching included this guy. We did have Doc Emmerich. We chatted with him. Here is our conversation with Doc. Doc, thank you so much for joining us. First question we got to ask, how are you? How's the family? How's everybody's health? Everybody doing okay? How you doing with this?
Oh, we are doing fine, thank you, and I hope everyone listening is as well. And I think it was appropriate that you picked me for your April Fool's show. Well, I go back a generation into the early 1980s. My first year in the NHL was 1980, and for several years, I was always caught on April the 1st because the Buffalo Sabres had a public relations guy named Paul Whelan who would come up. We would trust his releases all year, and then on April 1st, he would come out with one. And it would be unceremonious, just like all the rest of them, and it would be an April Fool's joke, but it would be just believable enough. And I should have gone down in my file of old Paul Whelan's releases, which I've kept, their analog releases, and dug one out for you. My negligence in not doing that before we came on today.
So you can't remember the Sid Finch of the Buffalo Sabres?
No, I should have. I should have done that for you, but no. It was back in the days of the French Connection and all of that, but it usually involved some sort of technology that was just believable enough, and then of course we would all bite on it, and then Paul would just have laughter at our expense because it was his annual April 1st press release.
I mean, other than looking back at old April Fool's press releases, what is keeping you busy these days?
Until midnight last night, Kevin Allen and I were working on a book. The deadline was midnight last night. It will come out in the fall, but you know, you guys, of course, are involved in publishing and deadlines and things like that. That is kind of new to me, being an electronic guy. But Kevin has done 16 or 17 of these. And so last night was it. And so there was a big sigh of relief last night. And that has occupied a lot of my time because I'm a neophyte at this. It's autobiographical, but it has a lot of hockey involved, a little bit of baseball, a little bit of basketball. But mostly my time around hockey, and it will come out in the fall, and the good people at Triumph have published it, and when it comes out in the fall, anybody buying a copy will know that 100% of whatever comes to Doc goes to the care and treatment of animals hands-on.
That's awesome. I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of old stories intertwined with my life of going around and broadcasting games in various arenas, some of which are no longer standing, which is the nature of sports, right? The shelf life on arenas is about 20 to 25 years. But when I first got in, there were arenas that had lasted 50 years. And there's some great stories of those times, too. And I spent 7 years in the minors. I always told people that if I ever wrote a book, the longest chapters would be the first ones in chronology, because a lot of colorful things happened in those early years. And as I've discovered, that's kind of how it worked out.
I can't imagine the treasure trove of stories that you can tell for this book and what was maybe left on the cutting room floor or the editing room floor here with, because you could probably fill five books with everything you've got.
Well, Kevin already has hinted at maybe doing another one sometime with just stories from the minor leagues. Yeah, there were a lot of promotions that we had, and a lot of them that other teams had. And I'm not sure if there are a couple that belong to other people, and one, for example, in Grand Rapids, one belongs to the late announcer in Fort Wayne, Bob Jase, and the other belongs to the announcer for the Chicago Blackhawks, Pat Foley. Pat told the story he was broadcasting the Grand Rapids Owls before he went to Chicago. And the old antiquated arena where the Owls played had been kind of let go. And one night during the game, the scoreboard caught fire. And smoke is pouring out of it, flames are coming out of it. So that was one. That's not in the book because it's not my story. It belongs to Pat. The other that belonged to Bob Jase was he was broadcasting a Fort Wayne Grand Rapids game one night, and the Zamboni stalled, and the reason it stalled was there was only one Zamboni, of course, and it ground to a halt during the intermission, and the guy driving the Zamboni was also the mechanic that had to keep it going, and he couldn't figure it out. So they called for a tow truck because they wanted to get the game going again, and they called for a tow truck. And the tow truck, they open up the doors, and the tow truck comes out, and he gets the Zamboni on the hook. And the tow truck goes about 10 feet and stops. Turns out the tow truck ran out of gas. So now they have to come out with a gas can and load up the tow truck. And then eventually the tow truck is able to drag the Zamboni off and they can resume the game again. But those are a part of stories that I inherited from other people that are not in the book. But maybe someday Kevin and I can put something together that will have a collection of things like that. But only from the archaic days of promotions in the minors. And a lot of those things don't happen that much anymore because. You were kind of a hand-to-mouth existence back then. I was in Port Huron in the IHL, and we were a city-owned team. And so, as a result, there had to be an accounting for the $300,000 that were technically lost by the team each year. And the team eventually did stop at the end of the 80-81 season, but not before there was a first-year defenseman, his first-year pro, named Claude Julien. He was called into the general manager's office. Morris Snyder was the general manager who kept the team in Port Huron going for a number of years. And on the day that you learned how much money you were going to make that season, Morris told him, there's something about you. I just like you. Normally, I pay my rookie defenseman $250 a week. And then the season was 23 weeks back then. I normally pay my defenseman $250 a week, but there's just something about you I like. You're going to get $300. And so Claude made $300 a week for his first year of pro. At the end of that season, the team had finished the playoffs, but they had an agreement with the Salt Lake City Golden Eagles of what was then the Central Hockey League. It was a pro league as opposed to an amateur league like the IHL was. And so Claude went there. Morris made a phone call, and they needed extra defensemen for their playoff run. And so Claude wound up going there, and the Salt Lake City Golden Eagles won the championship. So Claude wound up being on a championship team in his very first year after he finished the season at $300 a week in the IHL. Wound up going out west to the CHL, and he was a champion. Later played, of course, briefly for the Quebec Nordiques, and then, of course, his coaching career is well known.
Sean, I don't know about you, That's but amazing. I could do story time with Doc all day.
It's fun for me, and it's a nice from all of the other that we're encountering here. It's great of you guys to invite me on. It's always fun to talk to you, and our times together go back to, I remember, Dan, when we were attending high school games in northern New Jersey and watching some of the same high school players. And, of course, Sean, you and I used to hook up on NHL.com a lot, too. So watching What was the year that you were parked for NHL.com underneath the stands at the Meadowlands and trying to dodge the leaking sodas that were coming down through the cracks above you? You remember when you were located under the... Was that, in New Jersey?
Yeah, that was the 2000. That was the 2000 Stanley Cup against Dallas, and we were right under the stands behind the one goal. And every time something good happened, and all the fans pounded on the floor, the concrete would fall onto our desk as we were trying to write our stories.
Gave you the best location in the house. You were underneath the stands. Great.
But the one I remember more than any was the next year, and I don't know if you remember this. We were in Colorado at the Pepsi Center, and we had the visiting NBA locker room, which was palatial compared to what we would normally get. And they had TVs with DVRs, and we had Slapshot running constantly. And one day you walked in and picked up the dialogue right from the moment it started and went for like 5 minutes. It was McGrath talking, and you had the game program rolled up, and you were banging it in your hands, and you were screaming about scouts. It's one of the highlights of my career.
Oh, my. That's funny what you remember, isn't it? We had Hockey Day in America. I'm not sure. I don't want to push your time over here. We had Hockey Day in America a year ago on NBC. It was in Minnesota, and it was St. Louis and the Wild. And a couple of things stood out from that day. First of all, we had Pat Maroon, a St. Louis kid playing for St. Louis, and we had Zach Parise, a Minneapolis kid playing for the Wild. We had their youth hockey jerseys, and so we showed there. They brought along Pat brought along his youth hockey jersey from St. Louis, and of course Zach had his in town. So we were able to show those, and then show them on the ice playing for their hometown teams, which was kind of exciting to me. But before the game, we had a chat with Bruce Boudreau about Slapshot. And he was one of the Hyannisport presidents. And we were talking to him several times. And, of course, none of these stories are in the book. So I would tell you anyway, we talked to him about his team, of course, and did all the important things that we were there because we were working for NBC to do. But we also we had a Charlestown Chiefs button-down jacket, because it was Hockey Day in America, and that was also a part of it. And so Eddie and Brian Boucher and I had these blue jackets with the Chiefs logo on it that we were wearing, but we didn't wear it for the interview that Brian did with Bruce. But anyway, before the game, we got to talk to him about that. And he said that they had what was called the Viewing the Rushes, which was a studio that was in Johnstown that was set up for George Roy Hill, the director, and also any of the producers that wanted to be there, and also any of the people in the film that wanted to go there at night and look at what had been shot during the day and had been developed, and then you could view it. And he said one evening, there were only four people there, myself and one of my Slapshot teammates, and seated in front of us were George Roy Hill and Paul Newman. Mm. And he said, so we sat down, and Paul leaned back and noticed it's there. And he said, you know, a few months ago, I finished a picture called The Life and Times of Judge Roy B. I don't know if it's going to be any good. But he said, this film is going to be great.
Wow. Wow.
So it's kind of interesting. That was one thing that Bruce remembered from his time there. And, of course, he remembered the wind-up party, because Paul threw a wind-up party after they'd done everything there. And he also remembered their season. He was a player in the league and in the North American League or Eastern League, I'm trying to remember. And their season was over. And so the money that they were getting from the film was just like bonus money for the end of the year. And he said, one of my friends and I drove over from Toronto to Johnstown. And so we just drove our cars over. And one of the other guys said, you know, they would have paid you to fly. And so anyway, so we when we got there with the coordinator that was handling all the transportation, they looked up what the round trip flight was going to be, and they just gave us the cash for what the round trip flight was going to be. So he said we actually made a little money on our transportation going to and from the filming. That's funny.
You know, Doc, I hear that story and the time you spent there with Bruce Boudreaux, and I it brings up a question. Like, we're not going to the rink these days. You know, we can't. There's no game. So what do you miss most about it? I know you love getting there early, walking
That's
by the rooms, talking. Is it that? Is it just the conversations?
Yeah. It is. Yeah. It's having conversations like that. And you know, the last day that I was working in Chicago was the San Jose Chicago game. And I didn't realize, and you probably, both of you probably recognize this too, because you go to a dressing room. We weren't to be in the dressing room. We weren't to do, because of the new understandable rules that had come out that day in terms of doing interviews. Brian was allowed to be inside the glass because it was not involving a bench area. Some areas where we work, you have to be in one of the benches. For example, at Little Caesars Arena in Detroit, the inside the glass position is behind the door that opens into the Red Wings bench. So that would have not been permitted. Brian would probably in Detroit would have had to been up in the booth with us. But those rules just came out on the 11th that day that we were doing the San Jose Chicago game. Any interviews would have had to have been done with the boom mic and at a distance of 6 feet apart and before the game. There would have been no interviews allowed on the ice, none done live at the bench, no coaches interviews during the game. All of that came out that day. So it was an interesting day from that standpoint in learning what the new world was like. But you guys undoubtedly would have had the same feeling that I did going to the morning skate that day. And then finishing the game that night and getting into the elevator and riding down and thinking how many times you shook hands with people during a normal working day. And I figured it was probably between 50 and 75. Mm. And that includes the people we work with on our crew and the players that you would sit next to in the dressing room and the coaches that we have private time with after each practice at the morning skate, and the rink workers that you would see on your way in and on your way out before the day is over. And just that one aspect of it was shockingly different. And so I guess that's one of the eye openers. And one of the other questions I have, once we get back together and once we, if we in fact do play a playoff and we go through a round and one team wins and one team loses, will there be that memorable part of all of those Stanley Cup playoffs in a handshake line? I don't know. I'll miss it if it's not there, but I'll also understand if it's not.
It's certainly, I mean, it's going to be a completely different world when we do go back. And, you know, it's unbelievable that you were able to kind of take it to that, and understandably so, as we change how we interact with people and so on and so forth. I'm curious, you know, you talked about what you missed, and I'm curious when we do get back, you know, what you'll most enjoy being able to do once you're announcing games again. I know you're staying sharp by announcing windshield wiper changes and stuff like that. But once you get back to calling games, what's the one thing other than that morning stuff that, you know, the actual art of calling a game that, you know, you'll most look forward to?
I guess what I enjoyed about that before was was how wonderful the games were to watch. How highly skilled they were and the speed of them. The sharing of stories of players has always been something that's been important to me. And that was one of the limitations I noticed when we couldn't really talk with players much that day. Fortunately, there were two Blackhawks players who were playing their first NHL game that night, and their parents were there and all of that. And I had to kind of shout to them. I was able to talk to Hagen the night before, on the phone. They arranged that for me. But I was having to sort of shout questions back and forth to get information on family members and so forth, because those are things I like to do when a player is playing in his first NHL game. Because if it's an exclusive telecast, which ours was, that's probably the only record that person is going to have of it. And Jeremy Colliton started the two players. And so I wanted to try to get as much of that information out, at the start of the game, so that the only record they'll have of the first NHL game will be one that Eddie and I and Brian provided on NBCSN that night. And so I wanted to be sure that at least if I could get the family members' names on, that 25 or 30 years from now, when Brandon Hagel is watching this one game, the first game that he ever played, and Nicholas Beaudin is watching this first game, that they at least knew who they were playing with. Duncan Keith started the game. Can you imagine? Playing with what is by then a Hall of Famer, is your defense partner, and you're starting the game, your first ever game, and your parents are in the stands. I mean, what a thrill that is. And it's a thrill for me to be able to share that. But the other part of it is that the games are so exciting. And if we do resume and we have either regular season or playoff games, they'll all be incredibly meaningful. And that will be fun for me too.
No question about it. Doc, before we let you go, I wanted to give you the chance. Hockey fans adore you. They know you so well. If you could give them a message on how what's keeping you optimistic about the potential of us, you know, getting back to normal here, and anything you want to relay to the fans who watch you and listen to you and love you.
Oh, I would only say that we have good reason for optimism based on what I was hearing. And it's normally toward the end of news broadcast, isn't it, that we get the fact that even though the numbers may be a little bad over the next few days, that they can tell that by doing what we've been asked to do, that we are making an impact, and that we are going to not only make an impact but get ourselves closer to a normalcy. Maybe our lives are never going to be the same kind that they once were. I'm old enough to remember the time before the string of awful 1960s assassinations and how carefree that we were before. And I'm old enough to remember our casualness in airports before 9/11. And so I realize that this is probably going to make our lives somewhat different, but there will be a normalcy that will return, that will be maybe a little different, but it will be less pressured than we're feeling now. But by doing what we're asked to do, I think we've already made a difference. And if we keep doing that, we will continue to make a difference and get ourselves back to normalcy, which may also include the toy company and the candy store of life that we're all involved in, that we dearly love. We realize, I think, that there are things that are far more important in life than sports, but we also realize too that people love these pursuits, and they love the fact that we're involved in them, and that there is an addition to life that they bring. And so we look forward to that time when we can get back to that. One of the things I recall in speaking to nurses, and we admire so much, and this is always going to come out as an understatement, we admire so much of what these people do, not only the people that tend to human beings that are afflicted, but also the people that tend to creatures that are having to go through the same sort of health situations that are normal for creatures at this time. We're having some of that at our home. I've spoken with nurses in normal times who have said that any time that there's an athletic event that's playing on television in hospitals, the call button isn't used as often. And so not only are the patients focused more, but we also wind up getting a break. So there is one thing that I think that sporting events on television or on radio provide that help the culture of America. And I think that's something that we're anxious to get back to, but only in its own time, only when it has become safe to do. And we can all contribute to that safe time by doing what we're asked to do. I'm sorry that took so long.
Not at all. Perfectly said.
Beautifully, brilliantly said. I mean, that is the great, that is one of the, that's the best message I have heard about all this, Doc, is what you just laid out there and what you just said.
Well, thank you. I wish all of you well. And one thing we have through all of this are memories. And those of us who are older have a lot of analog things that we need to go through. There are cardboard boxes that I have in my office that I haven't tended to in a long time. And years ago, I taught at a small liberal arts college in Western Pennsylvania called Geneva. It was within 35 miles of a new hockey team called the Penguins. And I let one of my students know that if I uncovered any old tests that I had administered, what would you like me to do with it? Would you like me to mail it to you? And the response was, no, burn it. So at least I know what to do with anything old that I find that's 50 years old in a cardboard box.
We could do this all day, Doc. Thank you so
okay,
much.
Okay, well, it's great to have you to ask me, and I'll certainly look forward to seeing you two guys in person, and either smacking elbows or something in a grand greeting, and maybe we'll be in a rink somewhere, and we'll either hear the crowd or hearing pucks smacking off of boards in a warm-up.
Can't wait for that. Thanks so much, Doc. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Definitely thank Doc for joining us. Sean, that was great, wasn't it? Just, I could do that all day.
Oh, it's a little bit of normalcy. Like, I felt like I was watching a game again. It's just fantastic. I mean, the stories are almost endless when it comes to Doc. And I feel like I could write a book just from my interactions with Doc and my 20-plus years on the beat. So,
there is some news. Latest contract talks with Tuukka Rask, right? I mean, he has addressed it on radio in Boston, and he said he could sign a 1 or a 2 year extension with the Bruins. His current 8-year, $56 million contract expires after next season. So he could sign an extension this coming off season, and then he would reevaluate. And look, I think it's good for the Bruins if they can get Tuukka Rask in for another year or two beyond the 1 year he has remaining on his deal. It'd be great. I mean, he has been a Bruins all-timer, really.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, I think you would take him. And not only that, he's as good as he's ever been. It's not, you know, there was some talk about, you know, he might want to retire and, you know, the travel and everything else with a young family. He kind of put that to rest, but there's no, oh my God, here's a guy that's at the end of his career. Do we sign him for another year or two? It's not a Tom Brady thing. I mean, he is legitimately at the top of his career. I would say he's one of the best three goalies in the NHL right now. And if you had to say to me who's going to win the Vezina this year, to me, it's between Tuukka and Connor Hellebuyck. So I think the Bruins would jump at an opportunity to have him in the fold for an additional couple of years.
Yeah, to back up what you're saying there about Tuukka, he's 26-8-6 this season. He leads the NHL with a 2.12 goals against average. That's among goalies with a minimum of 23 appearances. And he's second in that group with a .929 save percentage, tied for second with 5 shutouts. And I think the reduced playing time, not having to play 65 to 70 games because of the emergence of Yaroslav Halak there in Boston, signing him and getting him to be fit into that role has pushed Tuukka Rask beyond probably what he wondered if his career could go, because he's playing fewer games and he's better off because of it.
To me, it's just Boston's a funny place, right? And he's been so good for so long, and yet there's a huge part of that fan base that just has no time for Tuukka, right? The whole blame Tuukka movement. He's lost all these big Game 7s. But I watched the Leafs-Bruins Game 7 that was on NBCSN this week as part of their Hockey Week Across America. He won that Game 7. He kept them in when the Leafs and our next guest James Van Reems, like, were dominating for a while in that game, and then they were able to come back and had that incredible rally and were able to win the game in overtime. So, you know, I don't feel he gets a fair shake from some of the Bruins fan base, but I think the team as a whole understands how valuable he is. And again, you know, obviously would do most anything to get him back for an additional period of time.
You know, he might not get a fair shake from his own players either. The NHLPA did these player polls and they're terrific. I mean, I love the player polls. They had approximately 600 players voting on all these different topics. And best goalie was Carey Price at 41.55% of the vote. Andrei Vasilevskiy was second. Marc-Andre Fleury third. Sergei Bobrovsky fourth. That's among 515 votes. Tuukka Rask wasn't there, but I mean, Price, Vasilevskiy, Fleury, Bob, not sure you can argue with any of those either.
Well, and I think a lot of people would argue with Price. I was really happy to see the overwhelming number that said Price was the best goalie in the league. He's been under the radar in Montreal because they haven't been good for a few years. But, you know, I have a couple of trusted goalie sources that I talk to whenever I'm doing my reporting. One of them works for us every week in Kevin Woodley. He does our Unmasked column. And every time I go to him and I'm like, hey, man, this is how I look at the goalies right now. And here's how I rank him. And he's always like, Carey Price, man. You know, you got to put Carey in there. And I'm like, but his numbers, this, that, the other thing. He's like, no, man, he's at the top of his trade, and he still is. And, you know, again, goalies are victims of their circumstances, and he hasn't had the best team around him, but he's still a top-end goalie. And, you know, if you're going to trust anybody, A, I would trust goalie experts that break down a lot of film, and then B, I would trust the people that try and score on the goalies. And if they're telling you that Carey's at the top, then he's one of the best goalies in the league. So I was certainly happy to see that.
These player polls, so they did who's the best forward, best defenseman, best goalie. If you need to win one game, who's the one player, any position you'd want on your team, who's the most complete player, the game's best trash talker, Brad Marchand got that one. Worst trash talker, Brad Marchand got that one. Player past or present you'd like to see play was Wayne Gretzky. And there's a lot of interesting stuff here from the NHL player poll. Anything jump out at you? Because other than, like you said, the Carey Price, and for me, Tuukka not being among the top four, I'm not sure anything like jumped out as a shocker to me. I just thought it was, you know, it backed up what we think and what we watch.
Yeah, I don't know if there weren't any shockers. To me, the fact that the game's leading scorer in Leon Draisaitl was not one of the best forwards in the league is a bit shocking to me. So there was only 2% of the vote unaccounted for. And for Leon not to be in that group and have a bigger number was shocking to me. I'll tell you the other one, and it's kind of one that flies under the radar that was shocking to me, is they did best uniform, the best jersey. And we've done that one when we've done our NHL polls from the player media tour each year. But number two for them was Vegas. And all I can remember is when Vegas came into the league a couple of years ago, how people just were up in arms about the uniform and how non-traditional it was and how it would never work and the colors weren't right and everything else. And now you have a group of more than 500 players, most of whom, you know, were schooled on the history of the league. The other three top jerseys are all original six jerseys, and to have Vegas as number two, I think is a huge statement about where the league is going and the benefit of getting outside of the cookie cutter and doing something a little different with your name, with your logo, with your color schemes, and how it all works together. So those were a couple that jumped out at me. And then the other one was, you always find the trash talker one funny, right? And the fact that Marchand and Drew Doughty were 1 and 2 in best trash talkers and worst trash talkers, but number four in the worst trash talkers, Nick Cousins. How does that happen?
I don't know, man. Nick
Cousins, how can he even be trash talking at this point? You need other people to be doing it. Yeah.
Well, I know he's not very good one. You know what jumped out at me on this, and we'll get to our next guest, James Van Reems, like here in a second. The question: would you be in favor of relaxing game day dress codes similar to the NBA? 73% said yes. 27% said no. So do it, right? I mean, relax it. Wear crazy stuff. Go ahead. Show your personality, right?
Yeah, but I think players do that now, right? I think, and we would be getting towards
they could do
the
more
end of the season. and into playoffs. And I think that's when it really comes out, you know, and they're always doing the walk-ins and as players come into the arena for the nationally televised games, and you get to see players, you know, really getting dressed up and doing things. And then you get to the awards and you get stuff like Brent Burns' camouflage suit and all of the other things that have gone on there. So I think players have an opportunity to show their personality with dress clothes. And I don't know that it would be the same opportunity if it was lessened and, you know, you could come in and team sweatpants and sweatshirts and whatever else you want. And look, those are how most teams fly. And then right before they get off the plane, they put their suits back on and, you know, so they're in public, they're putting forth. And, but you know what, I that's how I grew up in the game too. And, you know, you go to games now, especially big games, Stanley Cup finals, you'll never catch me not wearing a suit. And there's other guys, you know, there's other people that do our jobs that don't do that anymore. To me, it's a respect thing for the game, right? And you do that because you respect the game and it's important, and you're showing how important it is by going out of your way to not wear what you would wear on a normal day. So I guess I'm in the minority there.
Yeah, but I'd like to see you in a camo suit. I think that would be great.
When we come back, I'll talk to my tailor and I'll see what I can do.
All right, well, let's get to our next guest. It's James Van Riemsdyk, Philadelphia Flyers forward, and here's that interview. James, thanks for joining us, man. How are you handling this pause, and where are you? What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm actually out in Minnesota right now trying to stay busy and find some things to do. I'm watching a lot of different shows and stuff like that on Netflix and Hulu and Amazon. So I've got all three of those accounts going. But yeah, I'm sure a lot of people are in a similar boat with trying to find things to do.
You know, right before we got you on, we started to talk a little bit about the player polls that the NHLPA did. And I know you were a part of that. So I wanted to get your opinion on that. What did you think of some of the results there of these player polls?
Yeah, I took a quick glance at some of them. Yeah, I saw the Marchand one. I thought was pretty funny to have people on both sides of that spectrum. That must mean he's doing something right.
With Marchand being the best and the worst trash talker, do you have a good Marchand trash talking story that's fit for radio?
Yeah, you know what? He's it's kind of funny with him. I've had some different series over the years where I've been in some good battles with the Bruins guys, and I found with him, like, it seems like he almost plays better when you start to engage him with some of that stuff. So you really got to try to ignore him, because I think that's how he kind of gets himself into the game even more sometimes. So yeah, there's that fine line of maybe sometimes you can ignore him and that maybe gets under his skin a little bit. But if you try to go back at him, I think he thrives and it makes him play better.
Wanted to ask you, I mean, you had an injury. You still have an injury, I imagine, with the fractured index finger. How you doing with it? Healing all right? I mean, it happened about a week before we went on pause.
Yeah, I think things are moving along as scheduled as of right now. I think, again, it allows you to kind of be a little bit more patient with things too, which is, in my situation, obviously a good thing. So there's not necessarily a time crunch on I'm trying to get back for a certain event or for the playoffs, obviously, and stuff like that. So I get some extra time to heal, which will certainly be helpful when we get things going again.
When you look at that possibility and you know, they had those calls with a lot of your peers this week talking about a lot of different things. What do you see when we get to start up again? Do you see regular season finishing straight into playoffs? What do you think works best? And everybody's a little bit selfish about it, right? If you're in a playoffs spot, you're like, yeah, let's just go straight to the playoffs. But if you're not, let's play some games and see who can get in.
Yeah, you know what? I think ultimately it's not going to really come down to, I think, like different opinion-based things. I think it's going to come down to timing. I think obviously everyone thinks that we want to play the regular season out and then finish and go from there. I think that's obviously what we should try to do if we have the time to do that. But again, if it gets to a thing where that timing doesn't work out, I think it's a good opportunity, in my opinion, for us to maybe be creative and try to do something with the playoffs where maybe we expand the field a little bit. I know there's been talk about that the last couple of years, and who knows what that would specifically look like. But if it gets to that point, I think, again, it's a chance for us to kind of maybe explore that. And it's almost a free chance for us to do that. So, yeah, it could be pretty interesting. And I'm sure there's different ideas being floated around. But I think, again, it comes down to timing and what we're going to have time to fit in without maybe affecting next year's season too much.
Is that stuff sort of like, you know, the creative ideas? Is that the kind of things that you are talking about with, you know, other NHLPA reps? Because I think you're the Flyers NHLPA rep, but also teammates are throwing out ideas. Is that stuff that you guys are just, you know, in your own conversations talking about to see what, you know, what could be done and maybe throwing out your own idea of what you'd like to see done?
Yeah, you know, to be honest, it hasn't really gotten to that point yet for us on that level. I think obviously the higher ups in the league and the PA have been chatting through different things, and I'm sure throwing some different scenarios around. But I think as far as like with what we're talking about within our team and with like what the PA and the league is relaying to us, I think it's just more about everyone's health and safety at this point and just taking care of those things. Because obviously, again, there's things that seem to be fluid in the sense of things are changing almost every day and week, it seems like. So just trying to stay on top of that and everyone doing their part to make sure, again, because obviously this is an issue that's bigger than just sports. So just making sure everyone's doing their part to be a good member of society and stuff like that. So I think that's kind of what's been the focus for now, just taking care of those things and doing the things we're supposed to be doing. And then ultimately, I think it'll get to a point when things start to stabilize a little bit more that we'll start maybe throwing some of those ideas around and then seeing what guys think.
How much did your phone get in a workout? The Van Riemsdyk family is kind of scattered to all parts of North America at this point, no?
Yeah, for sure. I think exactly like you said, with my brother down in Raleigh, and then now my youngest brother ended up their season in college obviously got canceled, so he ended up going home. So he's hunkered down with my parents. So I feel for him a little bit there. He's outnumbered by my mom and dad, which doesn't happen too often, obviously. So yeah, I know they're watching a bunch of shows, and my dad is like, it's funny because I think my parents finally within the last like maybe 3 months have figured out like things like Netflix and watching shows like on demand and stuff. So like my dad's like been binging Curb Your Enthusiasm and Tiger King they watch, but he's like up till like 4 a.m. So it's like he's like a college kid now that he's bigger. He's like, this is awesome. Like, I can't believe I haven't known about this for the last 10 years. I'm like, yeah, welcome to the party. so it's funny that they, I mean, obviously now they've got a lot of time at home too, and not a lot of traveling around for hockey. So I'm glad they've found something to do to pass the time.
You know, a lot of players recently just did these video conference calls that the NHL arranged, and Tiger King was the thing that everybody's watching. I haven't seen one episode, but now I kind of have to. Are you a Tiger King guy? Have you been watching it? What's the great thing about this show?
Yeah, you know what? We watched it here for it took us maybe a day and a half to get through it all. But it's one of those things. It's very rare. I feel like especially because I was kind of a little bit later as far as when I watched it. But it's like one of those things. Like usually, like when the expectations are like crazy or one way or the other, it's like usually it's hard to surpass those expectations. But this was a show that, as crazy as everyone was saying that it was going to be, it was even crazier than that.
Really?
It was like just even as crazy as I thought it was going to be, it was even crazier. So I definitely recommend watching it if you haven't.
So there's only, unfortunately, there's only so much TV you can watch, right? And so many books you can read. And you're a professional athlete, and you have to be ready for when the season comes back. I'm curious, A, what you're doing to be ready, especially because you've had to change your workouts, obviously, a little bit with the injury. And B, you know, you're not all that far removed, especially with your younger brother as he gets ready to move his career forward. What do you recommend to the younger kids who are all on pause now as well?
Yeah, you know what, I think again, like it's been interesting in the kind of to see the shift of things and the way the game has been played in the last, like, since I've come into the league. And and I think again, a lot of the stuff that you can do now to train, I think it's all about just being the best athlete and having the adaptability to be able to move in a lot of different positions and directions. So I think again, a lot of stuff with whether it be body weight stuff or bands, just working on just being more elastic in that sense. I think that's kind of the way the game is going now versus like, again, when I first came into the league, there was a lot more hulking sort of players that you needed to kind of have you wouldn't necessarily skew your workouts towards more being more that way. You'd almost skew them in a way where you can again, if you're battling in front of the net with like a defenseman who's 230, 240, and you're going to be cross-checking her helmet, I'm like, it's a different sort of animal than now, where you have to be able to chase all these guys around and be able to move a lot faster, and skating has become even more at a premium now. So I think just working on all those different things to try to become a good athlete and be able to be adaptable and be able to move in pretty much any direction, I think, has just become so much more important. But that's a lot of stuff that you can do. You don't need a ton of equipment for that. I think, again, like I mentioned, you have a lot of body weight stuff you can do. Certainly, if you have the right things to do, that's all you really need.
How is that for you now, as you try to work out with the injury that you have without the use of, you know, a hand pretty much? How has that impacted you trying to stay in shape?
Yeah, to be honest, most of my minus the skating part, most of my routines stayed pretty similar. Not a ton has changed in my routine, which is, again, just kind of how I've shifted my training over the years. But yeah, certainly, again, it'll be nice to kind of get the green light to start progressing things a little bit more with the finger.
Let's talk a little bit about the Flyers. You guys were on fire when the pause came. Is it, I mean, obviously you can't be frustrated because there's bigger things, you know, on the horizon, and society as a whole is dealing with bigger things, but playing your best hockey as a team, I think, and really being able to kind of see that light at the end of the tunnel. What was that progress like as you kind of found your way this year?
Selfishly for our team, I mean, like you said, we were on a nice run and seemed to be getting better as the season went on, and really starting to hit our stride down the stretch here. So, we're just, again, hoping to get a chance to continue making that momentum and some of that kind of that good feeling that we had around our group. And hopefully we get a chance to kind of see what we can do with all that in the playoffs.
And like you said, you hope you get back to it soon. But right now, kind of on, just kind of sitting around waiting. So you were talking about Tiger King before and your workouts. Anything else you're doing? Anything you're watching? Any other hobbies that you've picked up?
You know what? At this point, not a ton. I mean, between some of the stuff, just staying updated on certain things with different conference calls and chatting to different people and trying to, again, keep some workouts in there and, again, watching some shows. I've been able to fill most of the days, so that's been kind of good in that sense. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't really done anything else.
Ryan Getzlaff's building a chicken coop, you know.
Yeah, you know what? I can't say I have that in my arsenal, so I'll leave that.
James, we really appreciate your time. Thanks so much. Maybe you can pick up a hobby, build a bird cage or something like that, right?
Yeah, I'll keep you guys posted.
All right, man. I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Be well.
All right,
be safe.
You too, guys. Take care. Bye.
Thank James for joining us. Hopefully he's doing well and healing. And Sean, one of the things that's going on right now on NHL.com, it's the greatest moments of the season so far. It's sort of like a bracket challenge, 64 moments of the season. And you and I debated one recently. We just did the Matthew Tkachuk between the legs goal against Connor McDavid's 6-point night. You chose the Tkachuk goal. I chose Connor McDavid's 6-point night because it included a hat trick and it was done all in the first two periods. No gimme points there, but I like this. You know, it's another one that keeps fans engaged and keeps us engaged too.
Yeah, and it lets you remember what a great season it was, right? And all of the things that happened. And you know, you just look at it and you're like, oh my God, that happened. And then this happened. And look, everything's personal, right? Like to me, and this was the argument we made, you know, there's no denying what Connor McDavid did and how amazing it was. But for me, the Matthew Tkachuk thing, it was the timing. It was the audacity of it. It was, you know, it capped this huge comeback. But that, again, it's a very personal thing. Other people could look at it and say, well, that was kind of show-offy. He could have just done it another way. So it's all going to be personal. But I can't wait till we get to, like, the Elite Eight. Those moments as we whittle them down. And the fans get to vote on this. So it, whatever I say doesn't really matter. People can look at it and say, well, what a shock, Sean's wrong again. I'm going to vote for McDavid. The fans vote and decide who goes forward, not you and I or any of our coworkers. So, you know, it's going to be a fan moments thing. And like I said, when we get to the Elite Eight and you have those eight moments going head to head, I think it's going to be really cool to see how it all plays out.
By the way, Connor McDavid's 6-point night won on the fan vote.
Just saying. They listened to me, right?
Yeah, I guess you made the more compelling argument, Dave.
I made the more compelling argument. Another thing we wanted to do before we jump out of this podcast is we definitely need to give recognition, right, Sean, to the hockey equipment companies that are now contributing to the coronavirus relief funds. You got Bauer. They, instead of making their helmets, they're making face shields. Bryant's Custom Sports is doing medical gowns. The Vaughn goalie equipment, they're involved in it as well. So I think we've seen it from some players contributing. We've seen it. The Arizona Coyotes GM, John Chyka, and their president and CEO, Aaron Cohen, are contributing 20% of their salaries to the Arizona coronavirus relief efforts. And now you're seeing it in the hockey equipment. They have the manufacturers have the equipment to make and help out the relief efforts, and they're doing it. I think it's great.
The players are getting involved. I know we had a story the other day, and other outlets had it too. Jeff Petrie donated money to pay for the meals for hospital workers in Montreal, and other players are doing something similar. Look, we can all do something. I think the biggest thing about this is people feel helpless. They want to help and they want to do something. You know, people have made masks in their houses, done a ton of things, but the biggest thing that we can all do to help, and it's the simplest thing, it's to just stay home and not tax our system. Look, we all have to go out and get groceries and maybe support your local restaurants when you can, but that's it. Otherwise, you know, stay home, let the health workers deal with this and let the curve flatten to the point where they're not overwhelmed anymore. And the more that we do that and the better that we do that, what the experts are saying is the faster that things will come back to normal. So if you miss hockey, stay home, watch an old game, and hopefully it comes back sooner than later.
And listen to us. Listen, rate, review us on this podcast. And I agree with everything you just said, laid out perfectly, Sean. And it was great. I'm glad we got an opportunity to do another one of these. Even though we can't see each other, at the very least, we can talk to each other and talk to the fans out there. Give them a little 45 to minutes to an hour of hopefully entertainment and break from what has unfortunately become our new normal.
Yeah, no offense to anybody else, but this is the professional highlight of my week every week.
It is mine as well. So I'm glad we got to do it. And again, like I said last week, I'd normally be saying enjoy the game. So we're out for now. We'll be back next week. And everybody, stay safe.